discuss about not so prevalent graphs and graph cohomology.
It's a pleasure to give a talk here near this beautiful lake. So I would like to thank the organizers for giving us all this opportunity to come here and stay for 1 week in these excellent conditions. So I would like to thank Anna and the other organizers, Dror, Tang, and Joseph. I don't see him. So thanks, Tom. Alright, so today I would like to tell you actually not one, but just three stories. So, you know, if you fell asleep, you can kind of fell asleep and get awake back three times instead of the usual one. Right? On the other hand, I can lose the audience three times again instead of the usual one. So, these will be three kind of loosely related stories about more or less the same relation on graphs, and I will try to explain how this relation persistently appears in very different geometric settings. So, three stories. Three stories about the relation which I would draw like that. So, yeah, I forgot the drawer is filming, but if you like all these YMCA and graphically explain this relation very nicely. Anyway, so the first story I will start with some finite type invariants of knots, and something which is called Gauss diagrams and arrow formulas. So arrow formulas, or Gauss diagrams formulas for finite type invariants of knots and kinks. And basically, all of them come from a very simple source. Just think about the linking number. And then the linking number, which is kind of a basic example of finite type invariant, can be calculated from any knot diagram, link diagram, in a very simple way. So if you're interested in the linking of two components in a link, then what you should do, you should just look at the diagram and look at all points where, say, the first component goes over the second. And if these crossings are positive, you take them with positive signs. And if these crossings are negative, you take them with negative signs. Right, so another way you can write it as sum of all crossings where the first goes over the second of signs of these crossings. Now, so there are similar formulas for high degree Vasiliev invariants. And in fact, any Vasiliev invariant can be obtained in this way by generalization of this construction. But let me just explain you how to construct such formulas consistently. So, first of all, you define a Gauss diagram of a knot or a link. So, a Gauss diagram G of a knot K which is constructed in the following way. So you just start from the usual diagram of your knot K. And so it's a collection of some crossings. Now you look at the preimage. Your preimage is a circle, if it's a knot, or a collection of circles, if it's a link. Oops, just too low, huh? Okay. We'll just move here. So suppose that, suppose that I started from some knot diagram, then I just look at the preimage. It's a circle. I assume that everything is oriented. Now I just mark preimages of each crossing. Now for each crossing I have a pair of preimages. And just to indicate that these pair of preimages are of the same crossing, I'll just connect them by chord. So this chord is totally abstract, it's not embedded, not immersed, nothing. But it just shows you the pairing of these two preimages. Now see here there are three crossings. For each I would have two preimages, and it's easy to check that, say, in this example, this pairing of the preimages looks like that. But we have an additional information. We know which one of the preimages lies on the overpass and which one is on the underpass. So we can as well just orient these chords, orienting them from overpass to the underpass. And then, in particular, in this case, we would get something like let me fix a base point here, just to see it easier. So let me place my base point here, and then as I follow the knot, I go under, over, under, and then I return to the same three crossings once again. Right, so under, over, under, and then again in the same way, I come to the same crossings. Right? And then finally, I put also signs of these crossings on these arrows. So if on a crossing I have a certain sign, say here it would be a positive sign, then on this arrow I would just equip it with this sign. So the result is called the Gauss diagram of a knot. There's of course the same object for links and for string links or whatever your favorite object is. If you work with links you have several such circles. If you work with string links, for example, then it will be several, a collection of intervals connected by arrows, but that's the basic object. Now, for knots, say you can reconstruct the knot from this Gauss diagram. So can reconstruct okay, from this Gauss diagram. And in certain cases, so basically we can recover all the information about the knot just from this Gauss diagram. The question is, how hard is it? So for some things, it's very easy. For example, the knot group, you can read off this Gauss diagram immediately. Some other things as well. Now, what about Vasilian diagrams? Some of them it's very easy to read off. For example, the same linking number. Now you can read in the following way. Now, crossings where the first component goes over the second now correspond to arrows going from the first component to the second component. Right, and I just count these arrows with their signs. Now, more generally, I can play the same game and say, okay, I will count some other sub-diagrams of my Gauss diagram, also with certain coefficients. Say, V2, the second coefficient of the Conway polynomial, we can calculate very easily in the following way. Let's start again going along the Gauss diagram, fix our base point, and then you just look at sub-diagrams which look like that. Pair of arrows which cross each other and which look both kind of where the base point sits between the arrowheads. And we again count them with signs. Now a sign of a sub-diagram is just a product of signs of all of its arrows. So for example in this case, if I fix the base point here, there's just one sub-diagram which looks like that, right? So this one. Signs of two arrows are plus ones, so the product is plus one, so V2 of the trefoil, of the right trefoil is plus one, if I would start with the left trefoil, it would be the same, just the signs would change to minuses, but the product of two minuses would again give me plus one, so that's an easy way to calculate such an invariant, and an old theorem of Kusarov says that that in this way you can basically get any Vasiliev invariant of a knot. Now the problem is that the proof is algorithmic. Algorithm is pretty complicated, and you should know the value of your invariant on many knots. So the question is how to construct such formulas in a consistent and easy manner. How can you guess which combinations of such diagrams and with which coefficients should you pick up for these forms? I'd say from the next one, for V3, you can count the number of sub-diagrams which look like that. And also sub-diagrams which look like that. But these I should come with coefficient 2. And how do you find such formulas consistently? So, what I would like to explain is there's a certain reasonable way to guess such things, so, which works in many cases. So, how do you work? I mean, how would I know that this gives me certain invariants and maybe some others do not? So if I would look at sub-diagrams which look like that, that thing would not be invariant if I would start from another knot diagram, construct the corresponding Gauss diagram, it will change. Actually, these things jump under a certain secondary demeistermorph. So these formulas will not give you invariant. So how do you know? What's the difference? Well, what you do is the following. You define a boundary of such an arrow diagram. So given an arrow diagram, arrow diagram, I just mean, say, something abstract of that sort, so certain, say, a circle with possibly with a base point and a collection of arrows. It doesn't have to be realizable. It doesn't have to be a Gauss diagram of some knot. It's just an abstract thing about which you should possibly think as a sub-diagram of a Gauss diagram, just without sign. Just something which could look like this or like that. So, given such an arrow diagram, A, just define its boundary in the following way. So, you just... Well, I'm very sloppy here because I have to be careful with some signs. We can't have the choice of a base point or certain orientations, but anyway. So, what you do is the following. You start from your arrow diagram. Suppose that I here, based on so that it will be easier. Now, it's a collection of some arrows here. Now, what you do is you pick up all edges here, so all arcs on your circle between these arrows. Let me call this arc E, an edge, and you just contract it. So you should be careful with signs, but you can, for example, start with minus sign here, plus sign here, minus. So if you have these arrow ends, you just go and say, well, if you contract certain arc, you first you distribute these signs starting from the base point, you know, so that they will every time you pass to the new arc, it just switches the sign starting. It's a certain rule, like boundary of your tetrahedron. Right, so things do depend on certain orientations, but anyway. So what you do, you just contract your edge into a point. So what you will get here in this case, for example, it will look like that. Right? So you will have a new vertex. So have to be careful with this base point, but let me think that it's somewhere in infinity and I will forget about these pieces of the boundary where an arrow gets into the base point. So as an example is that if I would take my Gauss diagram here, my base point, I'll start again. I don't care how do I start here, from minus or from plus, but for example, here if minus, plus, minus, plus, minus, I first assign signs to these arcs on the boundary, and then I just start collapsing each one of these arcs at a time, so the boundary in total, again I'm sloppy, I will not take these ones where one of the arrows goes to infinity. So, in fact, it means that I work with a long one. Anyway, so I should collapse this one. I will get a picture of that sort. Then I collapse this arc, and I will get a negative sign picture of that sort. Then I collapse this edge, and again, we'll get a positive sign picture which looks like that. So, now I got a certain combination of such similar graphs, graphs which are very similar to these arrow diagrams, but there's one vertex of higher valence. Think about it as four valence vertex. For example, there are two arcs of the circle and two arrows sticking in there. And as you see, the linear combination which I got involves three diagrams. It's about time to come here. And they're exactly as I drew here in the beginning of it. So now I can just add these pieces of these arcs of my circle back there, and you see that it's zero modulo of this relation. So if I would take this relation, and this plus minus signs which I got there, they depended on certain orientations. So in general, it's all orientation convention. One, why this should have an opposite sign than these two, but it doesn't matter. No. So this boundary is a relative cycle, that is, it vanishes modulo of this relation. So if I would take the boundary of A modulo this relation which I drew before, that such a graph equals to the sum of these two. Then this boundary just vanishes for the cycle. So the claim is that this is exactly the reason why this particular formula gives me a knot invariant. Now if you would play here with these diagrams again, put some base point correctly, so to count everything with signs, and again, you would look at the boundaries of these two arrow diagrams, so when you collapse one arc at the boundary at the time, take this combination, and you look at this boundary modulo, this relation, and it equals to zero. So it's a cycle modulo this relation. So
how would this work for the linking number with just one arrow?
Yeah, well, there are more, of course, but I'm just telling to you that, you know, here it's very easy because when I look at the boundary, I have to do something, right? This is kind of very degenerate example. When I collapse one arc, it just disappears. So I can say immediately that, well, this is a cycle in a certain sense, if I define things correctly, right? Which are very degenerate. Conjecture and I will maybe say a few words at the end. Why is it a conjecture and what the problem is? Why doesn't it always work? That conjecturally, any linear combination of such arrow diagrams, any linear combination A, say, of arrow diagrams such that, well, again, it's very loosely cut conjecture. I have to be much more careful in stating it, in fact, but kind of this will do for now, such that its boundary equals zero, so it's a cycle modulo this relation. Leads you to a knot invariant. Okay, so let me just give you some theory so that there will be some solid basis for this.
Also the opposite derivatives. The other relation like this.
Yes, indeed. I should add that there is a similar relation which I should add, but I just reverse orientations of these arrows. So if there's a vertex where two arrows enter, then I should split it also as some. Oops. S1 plus. It has a certain sense. It has to do with some formal introduction of some graphs. But I don't want to say anything about it, but if there is a certain object which you can introduce, which are some additional graphs with trivalent vertex of two sorts, and these are with a vertex in which one edge enters and two go out, or two edges enter and one goes out. And you can complement by these formal objects your initial set of arrow diagrams, adding them up, and then also working with their boundaries. And if you will look at the boundary of such a thing, for example, when you collapse also one of these edges, So you have three edges, each one you can collapse, right? Then you will get three of these guys. So basically what I'm saying that it's a cycle model of this relation, it just means that I can complement my linear combination of arrow diagrams by an addition of such type of new graphs with certain coefficients, so then it will be a real sign. Okay, so let me just tell you some theorems. So the first one is due to Chmutov, Khoury, Rossi. And which states that if you will look at all finite type invariants which you get from the Alexander polynomial, so you just look at all coefficients of the Conway polynomial, and all these coefficients, each one of these coefficients is a finite type invariant, and all of them can be obtained in this way. So, for all of them, there are these arrow diagram formulas where just all arrow diagrams which enter always with coefficient 1. So, each arrow diagram either enters or does not enter according to certain rule. And if you will look at this total linear combination of diagrams, then it satisfies this relation. And in fact, the example which I gave you here for this V2 is just a particular example of the lowest degree knot invariant which is included here. V2 is the second coefficient of the Conway polynomial. Okay. Now,
that theorem is all coefficients for Conway, just Conway?
For the Conway, yes. All coefficients, oops, sorry. All coefficients of the Conway theorem joined with Brandenburgski. Oh, by the way, ask him how did he lose one letter here. It's an interesting story. So if you just look at the Homfly polynomial, so let's look at the Homfly. It usually is written as a polynomial in two variables, Q and Z. Let me use the same Z as in the Conway, so that the Conway is specialization of the Homfly when Q equals to 1. And then let's use the expansion, the standard expansion Q equals to e power h, but let's not touch Z. So it will be a new polynomial in... these will be power series in H and Z, and each coefficient is a finite type invariant, and for each one of them, there are also such formulas. Sloppy here because I have to start from some special Gauss diagrams. Gauss diagrams which I get from a braid closure. But if my Gauss diagram is constructed from a braid closure, then there are such formulas also for each row, one of these coefficients. And again, this is the cycle model of these relations. So again, coefficients can be obtained. This way. And finally, let me just give you some explicit formula for all Milner's mu invariant of linked homotopy. So tell you explicitly how to get all these mu invariants. Now these mu invariants, these are very nice creatures, so the lowest one, this mu 1, 2, is just the linking number of two components, say 1, 2. The next one, mu 1, 2, 3, it's the triple linking number. This is the one which distinguishes Barman links from the unlinked. So this is known as the triple linking number. And this is the one which indeed distinguishes the Barman rings from the unlinked. Now, and then there are all these invariants for mu 1, 2, 3, blah blah, say n minus 1, and then you find modulo lower degree invariants. So suppose that I have a Brunian link so that all lower degree invariants vanish, and I want to define the next invariant. So then the next invariant can be obtained in the following way. So the formula for mu 1 to n minus 1 n is the following. So suppose again that I have a Brunian link. I have to tell you which arrow diagram should I pick. And I have some very special form. So let me just arrange all my link components nicely, kind of along the circle, so that when I go from 1, 2, 3, etc., up to n minus 1, and then to n, that has this special significance. There are certain symmetries, there's a lot of symmetries, but one component is distinguished here. I don't want to define these invariants following Miller, but we'll just say that there's a comma which makes this component distinguished. So, what you do is you just look. So, let me fix a base point arbitrary on each one of these components. And then I look at all diagrams which are of the following sort. They should all be planar rooted trees. So, here's a good example. Plus, there's a sum over all planar, I will explain now, planar rooted or n rooted trees. So all of these trees look as follows. So I just take a collection, so if I have n components, I am only looking now at all arrow diagrams in which there's exactly n minus 1 arrow, and there should be such diagrams that when I will shrink these circles corresponding to each link diagram into a point, and then the whole thing should look like a tree. Like a tree with a root in this nth these leaves and branches correspond to all the other components, and I have a root in the nth component. When I say planar, it means the following. Of course, all trees are planar. But when I take the planar representative of this tree, and then I go here along this tree, I want to see these branches in the correct order. Okay, so let me just thicken this back into some small circles. There's also an order of attachment of these arrows. So even graph, and I want to see them in the correct order. So let me just give you a formula, an explicit formula, say for example for mu 1 to 3, to illustrate it. So there are three components, 1, 2, and 3. And I should look at all trees with the root at 3. So there are three such trees. Here's one. Here's the second. I pick up some base points here. So the base points are stuck here. Well, it depends on, again, on your orientation agreements. In this particular case, no. But this is all because I work with these Brunian leaves. So instead of this particular one, I could, for example, pick up the one in which arrows come in the opposite direction and take it with minus sign, and it will give me the same. So minuses are hidden in these orderings. Now, in this formula in particular, you see again, hopefully, you see the same relation as it was before. Well, the sign is wrong, but this is due to some orientation convention. Again? But this is the reason why for it. And for high degree mu invariants, these formulas are indeed invariant just because of the same reason. So maybe we better stop here with the first subject. And I'll move now to the second appearance of the same relation. And basically, again, it has the same form that certain linear coefficients of some graphs modular such relations. That is, you know, some relative cycles modular some relations of that sort, again, give invariants, not invariants. But now, graphs will be slightly different, and their geometric meaning will be different. So the next story is about counting quadriseconds and triseconds and similar objects. So counting quadriseconds triseconds and etc. So let me draw now certain diagram which I will explain immediately geometrically. So let me just draw again the same circle, but now a graph which will be very similar to what I drew before, but now there will be several, say in this case just two, four-valent vertices. So before, in all my arrow diagrams, there were just a trivalent vertices, like here. And only when I looked at the boundary, there appeared one covalent vertex. Here I already start from something with several covalent vertices. Now, to each such graph, say A, I will assign a map from a configuration space, say a map, let me call it phi A, from a configuration space. Now, configuration space will be corresponding to vertices. So I will think about each vertex here as a point which lies on my knot. So these four points here on this circle correspond to four points going along the knot in this particular way. So the configuration space of vertices, so in this case it's four points on the circle, two product of spheres, and the number of copies here will be the number of edges. Now, how do I construct such a map? Well, let's just see how will I do it for one edge. Each edge will correspond to a copy of your sphere. And for each edge, it's just a Gauss map. So let me also order these edges, so we will start from this as the first edge, this is the second edge, this is the third edge. Now what you do is the following, for each edge I will just look at these corresponding two points on my knot. And I will just take it by the Gauss map to the direction of this vector connecting them. And so it will go to S2. So in this particular case, I will have therefore, say, as an example, is the map which I construct from this picture. So there will be a map from the configuration space of what? There are four points on my knot. So it's a four-dimensional space. It's just a base point. So the dimension of this space is four. Now there were three edges. One, two, and three. So I map it into a product of three spheres. So it's a map of a four-dimensional, open four-dimensional space into a nice six-dimensional space. What I can do is the following. I can look at the intersection of the image, phi of the configuration space. Now it's four-dimensional, right? Inside six-dimensional space.
Excuse me.
Yep.
Aren't all the vectors in the plane so that you're ending up in all the directions you're ending up with are in a circle?
No, no, but these points lie on the my knot.
So this picture is just a
symbolic picture, right? Which corresponds to looking at four points on the knot, which sits in three states. Right? So the only thing which I see here is the combinatorics. I want this point to be, you know, as I follow the knot, to appear the first, the second, third, and fourth. So there are really four points on my knot. So in particular, they are distinct also. Like this pair of points is distinct, as this was an embedded, so that's a well-defined map. Just take the direction of this one. Now, oops, I think that I should be over in 5 minutes.
It's the first story.
There you go. So this I intersect with the diagonal. So the diagonal, in the small diagonal in this sphere, in the product of spheres, where all three points are equal. Right, so the, here the dimension was 4, here the dimension is 2. Dimensions are complementary because I work inside this six-dimensional space. So this is a finite set of points. And the hope is that they intersect transversally, as actually the it really is. So kind of symbolically, this picture looks like that. I have the diagonal. I have this image of the configuration space. They intersect. And I count the intersection number. Turns out that it's well defined. It does not change when I isotope my knot. Now this intersection number can be calculated in a very simple way. Let's just look at a point of this intersection. What is it? Now, it means that I...
But you have to compactify the configuration space.
Well, it doesn't matter. If I compactify, I compactify it very naively. My points are just here on the knot. Right? So this was an open simplex topologically. I just compactify it very naively to a closed simplex. I don't blow up anything. No blow ups. So I have here some boundary.
And you're not claiming
that's true.
You're not trying to claim an existence result or anything. You're just counting intersections.
I'm counting intersections. So the claim is that if I start, kind of the correct claim is that if I start from a generic knot, I define everything, there will be transverse intersections. And there will be a finite number of these, and when I isotope my knot, this is an interesting thing, is that indeed these configuration spaces, they will move, right? So their image will somehow move. But these boundaries will never intersect the diagonal. So I have a good control over the boundary. So there's a well-defined intersection number, which does not change under homotopy. So it is a knot invariant, right? So in fact, this invariant, this is again the same V2. Now, let me give another formula for the same V2 for the sake of completeness so that you will see how does it work. But just think about it now geometrically. What does it mean that I look at this intersection? Well, it means that I took 4 points on a knot. I now connect them and look at the direction. Right? So from one point, I'm looking on the other. All these 3 directions should be the same. Right? So it means that I'm counting quadriseconds of a knot. These places where these 4 points on a knot lie on one line. And that if, you know, if I look back at my knot, these were 4 points, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, then I should see along this line, let me call it L, these quadriseconds, I should see them in the following order. It would be the third point, okay, this one, then the first, then the fourth, and then the second. So I'm counting quadriseconds of this particular time. Now, I claim that there's again the same relation, but now with a totally different geometric sense. And now the meaning is the following. So when I draw this graph, what do I mean by that? Again, I'm looking at the intersection with the diagonal. So it means that this, from when I look at this from this point, I see these 2 points in the same direction. But now, these 2 points, if they are in the same direction, it should... So actually, the picture is like that. There's 1 point and the second, and they are in the same direction. So it's just that their order may be different. It could be like this, basically, symbolically, or it could be like that. Like one of them, I meet first when I follow this direction, and then I meet the second. Okay? So this is exactly the splitting into these 2 cases. This is the case when I see this point first, and then I go along the same direction and I see these points. And this is the opposite. Okay? So that's again a similar relation, but with a totally different geometric meaning. And the claim is indeed that, again, conjecturally, whenever I have some linear combination of such diagrams, which give me a relative cycle model of these relations, then I'm okay, and I get some not invariant. And let me just give you an example of another formula for the same V2, so that you will see that I don't have to intersect always with the same diagonal. So here's another case. Let me now just fix some point on my knot. Okay, use it as a base point. And now I will do the following. I will take 2 points, consider this graph. Take the other 2 points. So again, I work with the same four-dimensional configuration space. So this is a different thing. But I'm now interested in the following. So I started from the same four-dimensional configuration space, 1, 2, 3, 4. There are only 4 points along the knot. And I map it now. There are 4 edges. So I map it now, the product of 4 spheres, into 8-dimensional. Say, let it be the first sphere, the second, the third, and the fourth. And now I intersect the image of this configuration space already with another diagonal, with four-dimensional diagonal, in which, in these 2 spheres, I want to sit in the diagonal, the first 2 copies, and also in the third and fourth. So the claim is that this intersection number is again the same V2. So in this way you can construct, again, there are such formulas for Milner's mu invariant, which I'll probably not have time to explain. and the third story, which I will tell you before going to sleep next time, maybe once, was about knots on thickened surfaces, where again there's a totally different setup, and there are again some graphs with a different meaning, but again there's persistently appearing such a relation, and again cycles in a certain graph complex model of this relation give you invariants, this time of knots and thickened surfaces. Thank you.
Any questions?
May I ask a question? My question is about V2, but in your first story about Massivo in Waya. So, do you, not about V2, but in general, do you have any kind of homological condition for when the 2 formulas, several formulas, give you the same invariant? You show 2v2.
Yes, yes.
Whether they differ by a boundary of something.
A boundary, exactly. So there's a setup where you consider certain graphs, that's the boundary operator, and the cycles give you conjectural, in general, link invariants, and they give the same invariant if they differ by a boundary. This is easy to put.
But generally, you have some homology theory,
yes, yes, yes,
which
so.
Homology classes that give us.
Yes.
Let's thank our speaker again.